Hello and welcome into the Gotta Be Saints podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Gotta. Join me each week as I speak with future saints about being saints. Today's podcast is titled Churches, Blessings, Signs, and Devotions. I have with me Sean McAfee. Sean, how are you doing?
Doing great, Brendan. Thanks.
Well, I am excited for this conversation, Sean, to just kind of talk about sacramentals and the beauty and the wonderful nature about them, your book as well. And before we get going in on that conversation, can you just introduce yourself to the Gotta Be Saints audience?
Yeah, thank you again for having me. I'm Sean McAfee. I live in New Orleans right now. I work for the Army as a civilian after a career in the Air Force. So I get to travel around a bit. And right now we're in New Orleans. I have about six kids and I'm a Catholic convert. Been a convert for about 12 years now and not going anywhere.
Good. Well, it's wonderful to have you here and always good to talk to other Catholics about incredible, important topics. So let's dive in. You've written a book and it really focuses on sacramentals. What is the title of your book? And then we can go from there.
It's called Compendium of Sacramentals. I think the subtitle is Encyclopedia of the Church's Signs, Devotions, and Blessings.
Okay. And what inspired you to write this book? And then how do you think it contributes to the modern life of Catholics?
Oh, great questions. Those are two really tough ones. So,
well, we can go with the first one first. What inspired you to write about sacramentals or this book in general?
Yeah, I had a small body, like a small corpus of knowledge on the subject of sacramentals because I wrote one of the small booklets for Catholic Answers, and their 20 Answers series was just called Sacramentals, 20 Answers Sacramentals. And I think that the formatting for that is always very standard. I've done a couple of those books now, and it's always 18,000 words. It's got to be real, real tight. But by the time I was done answering these 20 questions in sacramentals, I had a lot more material that I just had to, first of all, explore for myself, you know, on the world of sacramentals. And I, you know, I wanted to just continue writing on it. So I pitched a pretty simple book to Tan Books, back in like 2021, 2022, I think. And it was just going to be, you know, kind of a manual for sacramentals. They have a manual series and it's quite a bit more simple than this book. And I said, you know, in this book, we'll probably explore, you know, a handful of the most popular sacramentals and how to use them and maybe have some defense of the faith kind of things in there too. And they pitched me, like, I don't know if you have a copy of the book in front of you. Here it is. So they pitched me a full color hardcover, you know, book that's filled with sacred art on all the pages. And they were like, we want you to do our compendium series. And I was like, you don't have to talk me into it. They're like, what do you think? And I was like, well, I mean, I'm sold. Like, this is great. Like, what a privilege. And I think this was my 10th book. So there's some experience there, but nobody's ever asked me to do anything of this magnitude before. So it was a lot of fun. This just came from a place of curiosity, but you know, I always try to tell people this, like, they're like, well, how do you go over what books you want to write? And I said, well, I really try to write books that I wish I had. Like, if it's not something that I would personally own, I don't want anybody else to read it either, you know? So I try to have books that are a bit helpful, try to have reference books, beautiful books. And I try to just explain the faith to people to, you know, not just have as gee whiz, but as in a way that can help them practically. So this book has it all. It's got plenty of explanations about, you know, a multitude of sacramentals, and they go way beyond the scope of what most people think, you know, just the rosary or just holy water. It explores every type of sacramental. And I will say that this turned out to be, I think, and I've got just about all the recent books and that the church has, had at least in English on sacramentals. And I think this is the most thorough one, at least in the last 100 years. So that's awesome. Where it came from.
And so let's talk about how it contributes. You mentioned something that I really appreciate. You said, you know, if I'm going to write a book, I want to write something that I wish I had. And so let's talk a little bit about that. What is your hope with this book as it contributes to the life of the everyday Catholic?
Well, I hope that people can use sacramentals for what they're supposed to be used for. You know, there's probably two schools of thought, right? There's two extremes, I'll say. There's people who, you know, probably, I don't know, people who grew up culturally Catholic and might have sacramentals around their home, could be a crucifix, could be a rosary hanging on the wall, or maybe they even have one in their rearview mirror. And there's not a lot that's exactly wrong with that. But we want people to be able to use sacramentals for, well, I'll get to this point, what they're designed to be used for by the church. And then there's the other extreme of people who probably are a bit too superstitious with their sacramentals, like the brown scapular, or a favorite medal of theirs, or burying a St. Joseph statue in the yard. Like, these are actually condoned practices, but you can take
people
them
keep
to a
doing
level,
them.
you can take them to a level of extremism, and superstitiousness, which is, you know, you violate maybe the first and second commandment with that. So, I want people to kind of find a middle spot. I want them to take these sacramentals that are either very familiar to them, and I want them to put them to use. Sacramentals are here. They're defined by the church and authorized by the church. People don't just make up sacramentals. They're offered by the church in order to sanctify us, to bring us, you know, into closer reality of their nearness to the actual sacraments. And so what the church says we can have those crucifixes on the wall. Oh, my camera's not pointing up that high. Oh, there is one right there. Got a little bench there. Crucifix on the wall, or having a rosary or a holy medallion around your neck. These are not here to give you automatic, you know, get out of hell free cards. You know, they're here to, you know, yes, cleanse your soul, but cleanse your soul through the faith that it's supposed to remind you of. So some sacramentals can bring contrition. Others can bring, a desire to pray. Others can bring you literally to confession. And others can keep you in a life of devotion that should bring you into a sanctified soul.
Stop you real quick?
I'm on a roll.
So I should have asked you this at the very start. Can you just tell the audience, if they're listening to this, like, wait, can you just define sacramental? Can you just do that real quick before we keep diving in? I apologize. I should ask that right away.
Thank you. Yeah, I was wondering if I should anyways. But a sacramental is a sacred sign that's instituted by the church. And through the church's intercession and authorization, these are things and their devotions and blessings that are supposed to prepare us for sanctification through the sacraments. So something's nearness to something should always give you kind of a representation of it. It might not be that thing itself. So the sacramentals are like the sacraments, which actually provide efficacious grace. And sacramentals are supposed to bring us to those sacraments. Does that make sense?
Yep. I'll unblur my background so you can see. I've got my crucifix and my picture of Our Lady of Częstochowa, or my icon of Our Lady of Częstochowa. So I guess my next question, now that we've defined it, you've talked about how it contributes and what even inspired you to write the book, I kind of want to say or ask about your research. Did you find any sacramental practices that were once common but have kind of fallen out of use today that are no longer, you know, at least common practice?
Yeah, there's definitely one in particular. Actually, I'll go with two. So, first of all, people don't realize that church bells are sacramentals. And in the old Roman ritual, which was replaced by what's now called, I think, the Book of Blessings, it was replaced in like actually before Vatican II, by Paul VI. And so in the old Roman rituals, the church would do this thing. In fact, many still do it. You're actually able to still use the Roman ritual. It's just kind of updated now. They would baptize bells, and that's actually the word that the church has for it. Now, of course, you're not removing original sin from a bell, but you're actually submerging a church bell, either, you know, a small one used for, you know, service on the altar, or literally one up in the campanile, you know, up in a bell tower. The church would immerse them in water and bless them that way, which is just cool. Not a lot of people still know that. You don't have to do that. You can do it with sprinkling. But that's kind of a lost practice, or at least lost knowledge. Definitely the most fascinating one that I included in the book was the Agnus Dei. So, of course, Agnus Dei is Latin for Lamb of God. And it was this old practice that they actually still do, but it's just super uncommon now, is the Pope actually has not even just a blessing for it. He has got a consecration for melting down the previous year's Easter candle from the Sistine Chapel and melting them down into little wax discs called Agnus Dei. And it's called that because it's stamped with an image of a sacrificial lamb. And this goes all the way back to like the 200-300s, whenever poor people, poor Christians weren't able to make holy medallions because, well, that'd be wasting a coin. So they'd stamp it in an old prayer candle that had melted down. So that was a really cool thing to learn about, to explore, and then to see like, oh, how recent is this? And as recent as at least Pope Benedict XVI, and I think I understand correctly, and I don't make the statement factually in the book, but I believe that Pope Francis has continued this, and it's usually done in years of jubilee or on anniversaries of like a pontiff's, like a 10-year, 20-year anniversary of their pontificate. So that's pretty cool, and they're limited, right? There's one Paschal candle in the Sistine Chapel. And so there's only like a couple hundred of these things given out. That's usually to probably people of status.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is cool. I mean, it's something that I've never heard of, and I'm sure many others have not heard of it either, but another cool reality of our faith and, you know, the bells as well. You know, we, many churches today don't have bell towers at all, but
yeah, we got speakers,
you know. Yeah, they have speakers, or they even have a tower with no actual bell in it, and they have right. a speaker in the bell tower. Yep. So it is cool to hear that as well. Let's talk a little bit about skepticism. So how do you address the skepticism that some may have towards sacramentals as mere superstitions rather than legitimate, you know, means of grace?
Yeah, so great question, because I already pointed out, you know, that there are some who err in their use of sacramentals. And what I think the risk there is not just to that person's soul. Obviously, it's the witness of their faith. You know, if somebody kind of lazily carries around a rosary around their neck, there's actually nothing wrong. Like using a rosary that way as a matter of fashion is certainly frownable, if not completely frowned upon, compared to actually using it as an item of, you know, devotional piety. So I would say.
So you're telling me I can keep wearing my rosary around my neck if I'm using it for prayer?
Yeah, I'd say
That's what I always do, and I've had people give me flack, and I'm like, I'm not using it as fashion. It's not a design. This is where my rosary is at all times, and then I have, you know, my rosary ring on my on my finger. So anyway, keep going.
Well, several religious orders wear their rosaries around their waist. You know, I could probably reach back behind me and grab me a four decade rosary. I'm a lay Dominican, so I got this whenever I was lived in Italy. And I mean, they wear that around their waist, and several religious orders do this. Look, they're not doing it as a matter of fashion. They're doing it as a matter of locality to keep it with them. So in your pocket or around your wrist, or, you know, it's funny that, like you said, they got rosary rings and rosary bracelets. I don't see a difference between that and the practical nature of having something around your neck. Now, if you're using it as a matter of, like, you know, blowing trumpets and saying, look at me. Yeah, I think that needs an adjustment.
No, I use my face for that, Sean. I use my face for showing off. Look at me. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you look good. Yeah, so no, I think that there's definitely a line to tote there for any Catholic to just be aware of the witness that they're giving, because people can get the wrong idea. And people, you know, with adults, ideas stick. And you want to make sure you at least have the right intention, if not the right outward expression.
We'll be right back.
Interested in learning more about your faith? I invite you to check out Good Catholic. They are a digital media brand focused on sharing and teaching about the faith. From podcasts to blogs to digital series, Good Catholic has it all. Use the code in the show notes to get 20% off your order at Good Catholic. Amen. Amen. Well, so now let's talk about the groups of sacramentals. So blessings, exorcisms, and pious devotions. Can you just explain how they, you know, kind of impact people in a different way and especially in one's spiritual life?
Yeah. So some of these are kind of tough, so I'll do my best. Blessings, I think, is the most obvious. We see blessings all the way at the very beginning of the Bible. You know, a lot of people view God's presence over the waters, over the void, over the waters as a blessing of the earth before he had even formed the land. So God's presence there and his, not just his condoning action of what he did in creation, but his presence there is really what a blessing is. And so people have been Christians, and you know, the ancient Jews and every Abrahamic faith, they offer blessings in order to show God's approval, or to ask for a certain level of, you know, blessedness on a thing or a person or a place. And so we bless things in order to either consecrate them for God's use or to reserve them for God's use. And so you can bless just about anything, and you can bless just about anyone in any place. It's about setting that aside for God. So that's blessings. And those are what the church says is the foremost sacramental. I mean, how many times do we bless ourselves right before we enter a church, right? With the holy water. In fact, that's kind of like double, because that is a sacramental as well. There are several blessings at the Mass. If anybody's seen a baptism, especially a, you know, traditional Latin baptism, it comes with, I mean, at least 15 blessings. So yeah, it's absolutely the foremost sacramental that we have. And blessings are in an order of hierarchy according to like an authoritative hierarchy. So parents bless their children. A priest can bless somebody's children, but children shouldn't be blessing priests, and children shouldn't be blessing their parents, right? So there's an order of hierarchy. That's why we bless our meals, because we own those meals, right? Okay, so that's pretty easy to understand. Exorcisms, they're kind of similar, but exorcisms, kind of a touchy subject, a subject of a lot of interest, right? Some of the best sold books right now are on exorcisms, like Gabriel Amorth and whatnot.
Yep.
But so exorcisms is less like reserving something. It's more like removing or protecting from an evil presence, or the occupation of an evil presence already within something, somewhere, or a thing. That's pretty easy to understand, but there are a lot more exorcisms than people realize going on. First of all, every baptism has an ordinary exorcism, right? We denounce the devil, and that's called the exorcism of a baptism. In the traditional baptism formula, a traditional Latin Mass, there's a traditional Latin baptism, and there's actually three exorcisms there. In fact, the Benedictines have it's a special blessing for their own medal, a Benedictine medal, and that actually has an exorcism used with holy water as well with their formula. There's a lot more of those going on than people realize. It's not just, in the Emily Rose movies and whatnot, although some of that stuff happens too. Those are called major exorcisms, and those have to be performed by, they're delegated, only delegable by a bishop. So that's interesting. And the church still uses those, which is why Gabriel Amorth, the late Gabriel Amorth, is so popular. And then devotions.
Yeah, I just read his bio within the last year. So really, really interesting.
Yeah, I love his books. And then popular items and devotions of popular piety. That's the last category. And those are things like the rosary and the stations of the cross and things like that. Devotion to the Sacred Heart, Immaculate Heart of Mary. So it can be the actual physical sacramental that goes with those, like a rosary would be attached to the sacramental of, you know, the Holy Rosary or the Divine Mercy Chaplet, right? Or the physical or the non-physical devotion of these things, right? The specific prayers that the church has given us to pray or to participate in, like a like the Stations of the Cross. Like that's my favorite one. So it's an easy go-to. And little known fact, kind of gee whiz here, in the book we point this out, is that the Stations of the Cross aren't just like the paintings and the reliefs that you see in the church. Actually, to be a Stations of the Cross in a church, according to the laws of the church, it's actually just physical crosses. So you don't have to have some, you know, wonderful artist come in and, you know, bless your church with wonderful imagery. That's always great. But literally just having the crosses, that part of the cross is the actual sacramental of the Stations of the Cross. The rest is just what we go with it in order to help the faithful.
Oh, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah.
So you said your favorite spiritual one is the Stations. What's your favorite physical sacramental?
If it's not the rosary, I don't know. I think ashes and palms are really cool. There's a unique relationship there. A lot of people don't realize that the ashes on Ash Wednesday are the previous year's burnt down palms. Which is really cool, because it's like ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Whenever they say, you know, ashes you will, ashes you came, ashes you will return. They're actually also talking about the physical sacramental and the literal reality of what's going on there, represented on your forehead, of course, on Ash Wednesday. That's really neat. I'd say that's one of my favorites.
Definitely
as a father, you know, those physical sacramentals that you can teach the kids about. They like that too.
Yeah. Well, I think this book in terms of its practicality too, hopefully there are many parents who pick this up and say, wouldn't this be a great way to teach my children a little bit more about their faith? And then of course there's, you know, those who aren't teaching their children, but themselves want to learn. And I think what you'll probably see or have seen is instead you're going to get a lot of parents who are doing it to teach their children, but also are learning themselves, which is
of course
the beauty of our faith. Throughout the book, you explore the theological foundations of sacramentals. Which theological concept or explanation did you find the most profound while you were studying or researching for this book?
Yeah, so I think the most important one I found was the concept. Well, we kind of touched on it a little bit whenever we define sacramentals. And you can't really get away from that word, right? Because it has sacrament inside it. So the church's teaching, we explain that. But there's a concept about the effectiveness of sacramentals that is very, very important. That's where we start to kind of talk about, you know, superstition or skepticism about it. And it's this, is that the church explains sacraments, the sacraments like baptism and the Eucharist, the priesthood, marriage. They explain that. Of course, those are the channels of grace that we receive, and those are always efficacious, right? They're always effective so long as they're used for the right, or so long as they're given for the right purpose and the right intention, right, by the receiver. Okay, so they're always efficacious, but are sacramentals always efficacious? The answer is no, and here's why. Is the church teaches that sacramentals, it's actually a Latin term, it's somewhere on like page 6. We get to it right away because it's a very important question to clear up. Is that the church says that sacraments are efficacious ex opere operato. Okay, so that's a Latin phrase that means by their own work. So just in and of themselves, they will always confer that sanctifying grace onto a soul. Okay, but the sacramentals are not at all ex opere operato. In fact, they don't have any hard, distinctive, you know, impartition of grace almost at all. All they do, all that they're supposed to do is literally they sanctify us by us doing the work, right? Mm. So if the vehicle can get you to work, then that's the sacramental, right? But the work there and the value of doing the work at, you know, our jobs, that would be the sacraments. So these are like the road signs and the things that get us to the sacraments, if that makes sense.
The crucifix behind me, if it gets me to think about Christ crucified, then it is doing that task. But if I look at it and I don't think anything of it, or I don't think about it at all, it is not, not doing.
So this comes into play when people are talking. Well, you won't find it hard to get online and find people saying this, that the that holy water will remit venial sin. You can go online right now and a good Catholic website will say that, and that's absolutely wrong. What the sacramentals like that do is they're supposed to move us with contrition, which is the only way that the Catechism says we can be forgiven, and that is what removes the original sin. So the holy water helped us get there in a very meaningful way, or the crucifix could even have the same impact on us, but it wasn't just in and of itself, you know, kind of like I said, the get out of hell free card. You can't just touch it and be like, well, now I can go on sinning. You don't get forgiveness unless you have contrition. You're not going to get that until you look at that sacred sign the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to give you a chance. Any personal stories from either your work with this book and writing it, or just any personal stories connected to sacramentals that you might want to share, or that have just been, you know, kind of impactful. I have no doubt that as you wrote a book like this, the Lord probably had these little moments in as you were doing it and kind of those what I call God moments where you're like, okay, the Lord really wants me to be doing this. Was there anything in particular that stood out during this process, or maybe the reverse of where Satan was making it known to you that he didn't want you to write this book?
You know, I bet if I was to think about it, I'd come up with a bunch of good examples like that. I'll just say that writing this book, I was constantly reminded of the need to like not be a hypocrite. You know, it's easy as a writer to kind of, you have to be an expert on a subject, but it does not mean that I have mastered any of these sacramentals. And I'm constantly reminded of that within the humility that a book like this gave me. To say, not only do I not know everything, but I am definitely not doing all of these things. And I think I say that in the introduction is, look, the point of the sacramentals, you know, choose one. You don't have to do everything in this book. In fact, I say don't, because that can become extremely overwhelming. And if we get too, you know, zealous about our faith, the wrong kind of zeal about our faith, we often give ourselves over to despair because we can't reach that high that fast. You know, sanctification is a lifetime's work, and that's what these are for. So I'd say take it slow. You know, I prayed the rosary, but you can even go through seasons of life where you want to look at a different sacrament or a different devotion. So there have been years where I've prayed the liturgy of the hours or something. And right now this book is kind of zipped up. I don't think I've done it in a month because I'm focused on my rosary. So I think things like that, if I'm making the point clear enough, things like that just to, you know, remind me of the limitations that God has given me as a creature, but also the hunger to, you know, to want to explore all that the church has to offer. That's ultimately one of the most meaningful reasons that I converted to the Catholic Church was we got the fullness of the faith, and the church is pretty wise in 2,000 years on earth, and the adaptation of what we, you know, received from our pre-Christian faith. That you know, we have a lot to offer our faithful as the church, but we don't need to do it all at once. I think that was the most prominent and still ringing in my mind lesson that I learned writing this book.
Yeah, I love that. And it makes me think of, you know, my relationship with my wife and how the reality is, although she and I both are pursuing holiness in our everyday life, we have different spiritualities. We gravitate towards different things, prayers, especially, you know, and how we pray. And yet, you know, both of us are doing our best to love the Lord in a deep way. And it's good to have different spiritualities and try to complement, you know, one another in a real way. And I also like your point being made of, you know, seasonally, you're going to go through different things. I know if you have like favorite saints, you know, yeah, oftentimes favorite saints change over time, and there's seasons where, well, this saint was with me. Or of course you'll have your constant companion, like Saint Peter is always in my life. And I think probably a big part of that is the Gospels. He's always in the Gospels. How can I get away from him? but at the same time, you know, it's the beauty of our faith. So Sean, this has been a wonderful conversation. If somebody wants to get your book, where can they find it?
You could go to tanbooks.com. I think that's St. Benedict Press. But these are sold everywhere Catholic books are sold, you know, online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, any place like that. But what I'd really encourage listeners to do is go ask your local Catholic bookstore. They need your support, and the price is going to be the exact same, and they'll get it really quick. So if they don't already have a copy, ask them to order one.
Good. Well, any final thoughts? Anything that you want to say as we conclude, you know, our conversation here today?
Well, I'd say thank you. Thank you to you, Brennan, for having me. It was a great interview, and just look forward to the next time we get to talk.
Well, good. I do have two final questions for you that I ask every guest, so you can't get away just yet. Firstly, who is on your Mount Rushmore of saints?
Ooh, okay. So I'd say St. Dominic, because I'm a lay Dominican, St. Benedict, because, well, okay, so I'm actually thinking about becoming an oblate instead to a Benedictine monastery in Italy that I'm very close to. But he's just a good saint anyway, so St. Benedict. St. Padre Pio is my confirmation saint. And then Mount Rushmore is all men, but I'd say, you know, the Blessed Virgin Mary, my mom. I did lose my mom this last July, and I think I had a closeness to the Virgin Mary even before that, but now I've got, you know, I've got two mothers to look forward to seeing one day. So, yeah, I'd say the Virgin Mary.
Amen.
There's well, only four on Mount Rushmore, right?
Yeah, but you can have a fifth if you want to throw one more, and you're fine.
No, I'd say that's it. I love all the saints. I've been close to quite a bit of Neri and St. Rose of Lima and St. Rita of Cascia. And, you know, I mean, I could go on. I love the saints.
Yeah. All right, last question for you. God willing, one day, Sean, you're going to be a saint yourself. What are you going to be the patron saint of?
I say video games? No. Yeah. Video games. I don't know.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Is there a saint for video games?
Well, people are debating.
Blessed Carlo.
There's saints of the media, and there's saints of entertainment. But I'd say people are saying, like, because he wrote in his journal that he, you know, played Pokemon or something and, you know, programmed.
Yeah, he played what, like an hour a week or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's actually what we restrict our kids to. No, that's me just joking and jest, because I do have a penchant and love for video games. But for me, I don't know that I'd just be the patron saint of people seeking patron saints.
There we go. I like it. Well, thank you so much, Sean. This was great. And you're always welcome back. So please know that. But thank you to anyone who listened at home, who enjoyed our conversation. Make sure to give us 5 stars. Click the subscribe button. Never miss an episode. And thank you to our sponsors. That is The Catholic Company and Good Catholic. We appreciate your support. Thank you again, Sean, for coming on. God bless and have a great day. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe and check out goodcatholic.com for more details.